I wanted to start out this morning with a reading, and this reading is called A Veterans Day Confession for America, written by my colleague, Chris Antal, who served in the New York Army National Guard and saw deployment in Afghanistan. Most merciful God, we confess that we have sinned against you in thought, word, and deed, by what we have done and what we have left undone. We have become people of the lie, out to tame the frontier wilderness, while the beasts within lurk, hidden in shadow, paralyzing us in a perpetual state of denial. We have made war entertainment, enjoying box seats in the carnival of death, consuming violence, turning tragedy into games, raising our children to kill without remorse. We have morally disengaged, outsourcing our killing to the 1%, forgetting they follow our orders. The blood they shed is on our hands too. We have insulated ourselves from the painful truths veterans carry. Our bumper magnets proclaim, "Support our troops." But for too many, suicide is the only panacea. Our insulation is their isolation. We have made our veterans into false idols. Blood sacrifice on the national altar of war. Parades and medals perpetuate the hero myth, glorifying those who kill and die on our behalf. We have betrayed the dying, saying they will never be forgotten. Yet how many among us can name a single war casualty of the past decade? We have sanitized killing and condoned extrajudicial assassinations, death by remote control, war made easy without due process, protecting ourselves from the human cost of war. We have deceived ourselves, saying, "Americans do not kill civilians, terrorists do," denying the colossal misery our wars inflict on the innocent. The national closet bursts with skeletons. We have abandoned our Afghan allies, luring them in with promises of safety and security, then failing to follow through with the promise made using them and leaving them to an almost certain death. Almighty God, on this Veterans Day, help us to turn from this wayward path. Deliver us from indifference, callousness, and self-deception. Fill us with compassion for all who bear the burden of war. Grant us the courage to pay attention, to stay engaged so we may listen without judgment. Restore integrity, accept responsibility, keep promises, and give honor to whomever honor is due. These words may be familiar to some of you. I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this oath freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me God. The day I took this oath was almost 25 years later than I expected. Now it was finally here. I was elated. With my family around me, I made the promise that I would serve my country faithfully and to the best of my ability as a chaplain in the United States Navy. Of course, for those of you who have worked in government or been in the military, you know that nothing in the government comes without reams of paperwork. And soon after saying these words, I found myself sitting at a desk, proverbially signing my life away. Next page, next page, next page. And as I sat there with my recruiting officer feeding me the papers to sign, another recruiter in the office, his phone went off. And we didn't pay much attention to it. He started to check his message. He called over to say, something happened at the marathon. An explosion of some sort. Over the next 8 hours, as I finished my paperwork and spent the day transiting back and forth from Boston to the naval base in Newport to get my uniforms, the details became clearer and clearer what had happened. By the time I walked into my house that evening, I was a newly commissioned officer in the United States Navy, in a world that had suddenly changed again for the worse. My sense of triumph of finally reaching my lifelong goal of becoming a Navy officer was tempered by this reminder that what I had done was no idle act. I've heard it said that taking the oath is, in essence, signing a blank check and handing it over to the president as the commander-in-chief. My life, like the lives of so many before me who have taken commissioning and enlistment oaths, was now no longer entirely mine to direct. As some of you who are good at math have figured out, that I only took my commissioning oath a few months ago, April 15th, 2013. And if you've had enough coffee to clear the cobwebs out of your heads, you've also realized I'm not young, and also fairly new to this thing called the military. So I'm humbled today to stand before you on behalf of my military chaplain colleagues to speak to you on Veterans Day. May the words that I share with you this morning do them justice. The UU World, speaking of my UU military colleagues, the UU World reported this past February that there are 10 UU ministers now serving as military chaplains. Since that time, another of my colleagues and I entered the ranks, so as best I can tell, there's only 12 of us now serving in all four branches of the service. We are, as the UU World called us, a rarity. We are rarities in a number of ways. Rare amid the ranks of UU ministers, and the rare religious liberals in the world of military chaplains. It is a most unusual place to find oneself, neither entirely of one world or the other. But yet, as I am finding now in only my first few months of this ministry, it is an awesome ministry. The mission of the U.S. Navy Chaplain Corps is to promote the spiritual, religious, moral, and personal well-being of the members of the Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard. The Chaplain Corps achieves this with the goal to facilitate the religious requirements of personnel of all faiths, to provide faith-specific ministries, care for all service members, including those who claim no religious faith, and advise the command on matters regarding the free exercise of religion. Navy chaplains do this in combat situations, on the ground with the Marine Corps and with ground-based Navy personnel. Navy chaplains do this afloat on the various ships of our fleet. Navy chaplains are also tasked as responders, first responders to the sexual assault prevention program, suicide prevention program, as well as providing family ministry to service members in need. Navy chaplains work doing operational stress control, combat operational stress control, helping our service members going into combat and coming out of combat to make sense of the experiences that they've had. And last but not least, we lead services on our ships and at our installations around the world. I'm an avid fan of the Discovery Channel and the Animal Planet and all of those, and I remember hearing once that the shark and the swordfish are the top predators. But because they are the top predators, they are dangerous for us to eat. Because being at the top, they have consumed all of the toxins that have come up through the food chain and resided in them. And it would be inapt to say that the chaplains are top predators. Far from it. We are, by Geneva Convention, not allowed to carry weapons. We have religious program specialists to do that for us. But we are at the end of the food chain of emotional, moral, and spiritual distress. The breadth of what is expected from the military chaplain brings them face to face with almost all of the heavy issues facing today's military. If you have been reading the papers, you know these issues are substantial. The Globe reported just this past week that there were 3,553 sexual assaults reported across all four military branches, an increase of 46% from the year before. In 2012, according to a statistic by NBC News, 349 service members committed suicide. These heavy issues are in addition to what might be called the usual issues and perennial issues of drug and alcohol use, divorce and separation, post-traumatic stress, moral and spiritual distress. It is the military chaplain's job to encounter all of this and provide support. In war zones, this often means that the chaplain is dealing with these issues alone and without any support from themselves, being as they are at the end of the food chain. Unitarian Universalist ministers in the military also find themselves standing in many unusual places within the military world. Far more theologically liberal than many of other chaplains, the military seems to look towards us to fill the need of serving the spiritual needs of the growing number of service members who do not fit into neat theological boxes. This actually worked in my favor as a 45-year-old looking to become a military chaplain because the Navy, at least, made Unitarian Universalist ministers a high priority to get us in the service. And so they were willing to look the other way for me at my age. Far more socially liberal than most other chaplains and many other service members, UU military chaplains may easily find themselves in positions of conflicting loyalties. Nowhere is this more apparent than in these days as all the branches of the military struggle with the post-don't-ask-don't-tell world. Although Don't Ask, Don't Tell has gone by the wayside, the battles continue over lesbians, gays, and bisexuals in the military. And these reverberate no less than through the chaplain corps, as major conservative faith groups have instructed their military chaplains to withhold providing any pastoral services to LGB service members, or acting in any way that might merely give the impression of pastoring to gays, lesbians, and bisexuals. Military chaplaincy is quickly coming to a crossroads with all these issues floating around, and there are those who are predicting the end of the chaplain corps as we know it. UU military chaplains end up filling these gaps between what leadership wants and what a vocal majority of service members seem to want. It is a difficult place to occupy. And if you are interested to see how difficult it can be for some of my colleagues who have been in the military for a while, I invite you to check out some of the blogs that are out there. One that comes to mind being the most vehement is by somebody called the Christian Fighter Pilot, where he makes many personal attacks by name on many of my Unitarian Universalist colleagues. We UU military chaplains also find ourselves in the most unusual place of seeming at times to be at odds with our own faith tradition. In a peace-loving faith, we wear uniforms and prepare for and go to war to support the warriors. In a faith that promotes the democratic process and equality, we minister in the most rigidly hierarchical of societies. My colleagues who have come before me tell of times that they were challenged, shunned, or not made to feel welcome in their Unitarian Universalist communities for the sole reason that they serve in the military. Thankfully, my experience so far has not been the same, and I credit them for blazing the way. I also credit our denominational office for doing a lot of work to welcome Unitarian Universalists who serve in the military. I began this morning with a reading by my colleague in UU ministry, Chris Antal. Chris's ministry sums up for me all of what it means to stand in this most unusual place of being UU in the military and being military among Unitarian Universalists. If you go onto YouTube, there is a very moving video that Chris did as he entered the National Guard, talking about the flak that he got from Unitarian Universalists for joining the military. But I think the hardest for Chris was probably standing in the unusual place of being a religious liberal in the military. The one and only time I met Chris was last February at a UU military ministers conference down in Florida. He had just returned to the States, literally only 2 days before, from Afghanistan, where he was serving as a chaplain to the New York Army National Guard. His deployment was ended 3 months earlier than was expected when his superiors found out about his Veterans Day confession for America, which he shared with the troops on Veterans Day of last year. His was the look of a haunted man, haunted perhaps for having served in the war zone, no doubt, but haunted also, I imagine, because he found himself in one of the unusual and painful places, caught between his calling to our faith and his calling to our service members, and having been forced to choose one over the other. Although at the time his court-martial investigation was just about to begin or was ongoing, I think Chris knew at that time that his time in uniform was over, that the die had been cast in a way that allowed no return to the uniform service. Soon after returning home, Chris wrote the following. As a Unitarian Universalist minister deployed to Afghanistan as an army chaplain, I faced the daunting challenge of being a good steward of our heritage in a combat zone and bringing the prophetic witness of our principles to bear on the military institution. As a member of the profession of arms, in service to the nation, I also felt an obligation to provide spiritual leadership to the people of the United States, many of whom have been all too separated from the consequences of our war-making over the past decade. I wrote a Veterans Day confession for America to address this harmful separation, facilitate purification and cleansing, restore connections, and reconcile us to right relationships. Jesus taught, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." There is nothing I want more than for God to bless America and for God to bless our troops. My hope is that if more people will embrace confessions like this one, we might actually secure these blessings. Meeting Chris was a sobering moment for me as I stood on the precipice of being commissioned. But as I enter into this ministry, I am excited, humbled, and a bit frightened. I'm excited because I am a patriot, that I do love this country dearly, do love its democratic principles and the Constitution that I've sworn to defend. And I have to admit, as the choir sang "God Bless America" this morning, it took a moment for me not to cry. I am humbled to stand in this sacred position. And I am scared. At times I seem to speak a completely different language of religion and faith than my fellow chaplain colleagues from other traditions. And I find myself feeling the need at times to be circumspect in my prophetic voice, lest the military push me out. But I am excited. Unitarian Universalist ministers especially, but all chaplains, are well placed to make a difference in ways no other discipline can, as we tend to those spiritual and moral and emotional wounds, the wounds of the soul that our warriors face, our warriors that we have put out there, that our government has put out there. Those wounds are on our hands. And I'm excited also because as my colleague, Unitarian minister colleague, and also Army chaplain colleague, George Tiger says, I'm excited to put on this uniform because I am excited to stand for the values of duty, honor, country, and friendship, and to show the world that there are values that we can still stand by. So today, as we honor all veterans, I lift up to you one slice of military life, those serving to serve others. These chaplains deserve our recognition for having taken the oath, put on a uniform, and willingly gone into harm's way beside our warriors. We should be mindful of them today as well, because I believe that UU military chaplains are canaries in the coal mine. If Unitarian Universalist congregations are able to honor their ministries, despite what may seem at first as obvious differences and contradictions with our principles and shared beliefs, then the Unitarian Universalists will go a long way to welcoming all veterans into our congregations, of closing that gap that Chris Antal so much points out to us. Can we, as we hear this message, move beyond taking one time a year that we just say thank you to our veterans, to an ongoing and deeper conversation with the warriors and their wounded? At the same time, if Unitarian Universalist ministers such as me are able to continue to join the military and to thrive in our ministries, then our military, I believe, will finally be living up to our constitutional principles of freedom, of religion, and equality. Both sides have a way to go, though there are signs of hope, as I have experienced, in how well the UUA has worked to recognize and support our ministries, and at least in my experience, how welcoming other Unitarian Universalists have been to this choice that I have made. In the meantime, those of us in military ministry will continue to occupy a most unusual place between both worlds. I pray that our congregations are present for us when that most unusual place becomes a bit too hard, as it became for Chris Antal last year. And I hope maybe that our congregations will join us in that most unusual place to bring love, healing, and hope, to break forth channels for the streams of love to all who have served and will serve our country. So may it be. As it is Veterans Day, if you currently serve in uniform, I would ask you to stand if you're willing. If you currently have a loved one serving in uniform, I invite you to stand. If you have served in uniform, I invite you to stand. And if you have loved ones who have served, I invite you to stand. I thank you all for your service, and I thank you to the loved ones for giving your loved ones to the service of our country.